Welcome to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Excited to be here today with an old friend of mine, Dr. Michael Zwirk. He's a thoracic surgeon at Independence Health in Greensburg. And Dr. Zwirk, we're thrilled to have you on the show today. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, Jen. It's a wonderful to be back with you and to talk to your listeners today about lung cancer and lung cancer screening and vaping.
Yes. There's so much to talk about with all this, and we really want to get into the details about all of the advances that are happening in medicine right now. But I always like to start out the show by talking about you and where you grew up, where you went to school, and how in the world you steered your medical path toward thoracic surgery. So why don't you take some time and tell us a little bit about you?
Well, it's been a pleasure. I've lived in Western Pennsylvania now for 10 years. One of the most enjoyable places I've ever lived, a great place to raise a family. I grew up in New Jersey, went to medical school at Washington University in St. Louis, and did training in at the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill and in Pittsburgh. My wife's from Western Pennsylvania. She's from Uniontown. And we decided to come out here to really raise our two daughters. And it was probably the best decision we ever made. Love being here. Population of patients that we serve is tremendous. And they really need specialty care. Everybody in the United States and the world needs specialty care, but certainly out here in Western Pennsylvania, there's certain things in the environment and in the background of industry and the aging population that really needs people like us who do thoracic surgery and take care of lungs. I got interested in thoracic surgery because where I went to medical school, the surgeons there were the first people to take out an entire lung and have a patient survive. And I actually met some of the early surgeons that did thoracic surgery at Washington University. And it really fascinated me about working in the chest and disease processes there. And it's been a, and so we've kind of dovetailed from big incisions, big operations to robotic technology and really have changed the whole spectrum of care of people with those kind of problems. And it's been part of my career, and I've had a role in some of this technology, and I'm really excited to have had the opportunity to take care of so many people out here with it.
It's amazing. I think maybe people don't realize as few, would it be accurate to say as few as maybe 10 years ago, 15 years ago, lung surgeries involved opening up the entire chest. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the real paradigm shift was probably, the early 2010 and 11 period where there were minimally invasive approaches, and a lot of it was developed at the University of Pittsburgh. And so what's changed is the robotic approach. And the robotic approach was really in its infancy around 2010. And I was fortunate enough to be one of the early adopters of that technology. And now pretty much, 99% of people being trained in what we do use robotic platforms to help people. And so the old days, people were afraid of lung surgery because you had to make big incisions, cut ribs, and it was very morbid. People spent weeks in the hospital recovering, had chronic pain. And today, we do things with the robot and everybody goes home overnight, or many people go home overnight. And when I send them home, they can drive, they can do their activities of daily living, and they can get on. And this is not just people that are 50 years old. These are 80-year-olds, 90-year-olds. So it's really changed the spectrum and opportunity of care. And so one of the things that has helped, it's allowed us to use other things to help with cancer. So if we can do a minimally invasive surgery and the people recover fast, they can get on to other forms of therapy. And together, all these therapies are really changing survivability of lung cancer and other cancers. And that's really the game changer, is using less invasive technology to allow for other forms of therapy that people could never get. If you had a big operation, you're in the hospital for weeks, you weren't getting other treatments.
No.
And now you can get immune therapy, you can get chemotherapy, you can get focal radiation therapy, you can get targeted therapy, all these great things. And at the end of the day, the survival curves are improving. And it's really tremendous.
I'm for sure. I think, you know, even if people maybe survive the surgery and were on the path to recovery with cancer, with big incisions and weeks in the hospital, infection rates were probably, you know, exponential compared to where they are now. The safety, the quality, all of that.
100%. And it was, you know, the hospital beds, they got weaker, they got frail, they had complications, pneumonias, wound problems, infection, they got mentally weak. And now we tell them, hey, you come in, you're getting out of here. Hospitals are not a place to recover from surgery. You recover from home. We get you in, we get you home. And it's really changed the whole pattern. And, you know, along with that, it really is about screening. You know, for years, we screen for so many things. So you say, how do I prevent dying from cancer? That's an important question. We all ask that question. It doesn't matter who you are. And so there's a couple of parts. There's a parts about modifying your risks. And the second piece is screening. So for years, we've screened with mammograms to find early stage breast cancer. You know, we've done colonoscopy to find early stage colon cancer and never had a good screening platform for lung cancer. And people were embarrassed. They said, hey, you know what? I smoked. I did this to myself. I don't want to find out that I have a fatal death sentence. And so what's is that that's not true. That's not true at all. And in fact, what really did it to you wasn't the fact that you smoked. It was about the nicotine addiction issues that many companies popularize to get people addicted to smoking. And so we see that. And when we see people that have smoked their whole life, we don't sit there and judge them. We support them. And we understand that the power of nicotine addiction is so powerful that it's very hard for people to stop. And the goal here is really to find tumors before they cause a problem. So around 2015, there really was a national initiative, a worldwide initiative to find people that have smoked and offer them a screening modality that never worked before. And it was just simply getting what's called a CAT scan. It's just a detailed X-ray of the lungs. It takes, you know, less than a minute, no IVs, no nothing. And it can find things just like mammograms find breast cancer. And so now that's really the game changer is getting people that have smoked, people with family histories of lung cancer, and getting them a CAT scan and watching them, you know, until they're almost 90 years old. And if we do that, we will change paradigms of dying from cancer.
Wow. And so I've seen the advertisements for the low dose CT scans. I've made a few with you, and there are certain criteria that qualify, but then insurance does pay for that, right?
Absolutely. So through the Affordable Care Act under President Obama, it was a mandate for commercial insurance to pay for screening. And CMS has adopted screening as a covered benefit for lung cancer around 2015. So virtually every patient who qualifies, and the qualifications are simple. If you smoked and you're between the ages of 50 and 80 years old, you qualify. And you should not be denied the right, and it should be a covered benefit. And what's changing, though, is these criteria keep on broadening. So when we first started this, it was like to age 75. Now they've gone up to age 80. And it was 55 years old as the start. Now it's down to 50. And ultimately, the age is going to drop even more. And so if your mother had lung cancer, if your brother had, if your sister had lung cancer, and you had smoked, maybe even less than that amount of cigarettes, 20 pack year equivalent, you may be eligible for identification of early stage lung cancer. And that's what's happening worldwide. These criteria keep on changing. Right now, the criteria are age 50 to 80, 20 pack year equivalent. That means a pack of cigarettes a day for 20 years, two packs for 10 years. And you have had to have smoked within the past 15 years. Or you can be a current smoker. What will change shortly is that there's going to be no 15-year time frame. So if you smoked 30 years ago, you'll still qualify. Mm. And the American Cancer Society in November came out with that recommendation. And we'll see how the insurance companies follow. But they're basically saying the history of smoking is more important than the time interval from when you stop. And that's absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. And we see it here. I'll tell you, Jen, in Western Pennsylvania, the family history of lung cancer is really significant.
Really?
We see people in our office all the time who, you know, when they had a mother who smoked, they had a sister who smoked and had lung cancer, they are at high risk. And those people should really, really look for a screening opportunity.
Wow.
At, you know, at our place at Independence here, we've now done over 20,000 scans. Imagine seeing 20,000 people at Acushnet Stadium. That's a lot of scans to do. And we've learned a lot along the way. We've identified a lot of cancer. We've helped a lot of people. And we're looking to reach more because we know we're only reaching about 5% of people in Western Pennsylvania that could qualify for this.
And so once they come in, is it a screening every year, every other year? How does that work?
Well, it starts as an annual screen. So importantly, if we say of all the cancer we've identified through screening, how many were on the first CAT scan? It was about 50%. So 50% roughly are found on subsequent scans. So it's important for people to realize that first scan, if it's negative and you have about a 98% chance of having a clean scan, and you should remember that that's great. Celebrate that. But you got to come every year because mm-hmm. we want to find things as they change.
Right.
And people come in, they say, hey, I got a clean scan, I'm good. Well, not really. But it's exciting to know that you're clear. If you stay in the program, then your chance of dying from lung cancer goes way down because we'll find something very early, very treatable. And that's the important piece.
Okay, so take me through, I know you guys have a process. So let's say you qualify for the low-dose CT, you come in, you get it, they find something. What is the process? Because you guys walk them from start to finish through the operative and also probably treatment.
Well, there's two pieces to this. The first piece is agreeing to get scanned. And the second piece, and the government really enforced this, and this is an important part. We want people to understand as much as they can about screening, why they get screened. Could screening be harmful? What's the benefit? And the other piece of that is smoking cessation discussion. So not only do we want people to get screened, but current smokers, we want to help understand paths to stop smoking because that does make a difference. So we have that discussion. We document that for the patients and they go get a scan. If there's an abnormality on that scan, they will know within 24 hours, not only by their patient portal, but by a personal phone call, which is really huge. You read a report about yourself on a scan, it scares you. You don't know what you're looking at. So what we do is we call people. Once a week, we review the week's CAT scans. And it's a whole team of people from radiologists to pulmonologists to thoracic surgeons to our support team. And we all decide what's really significant, what isn't. So we could find spots, lung nodules, little things that are invariably benign, but we got to watch them. So we may, it looks good now, but rather than 12 months, come back in 6 months, let's just check it again. Your insurance company will pay for that.
Right.
And so we follow lung nodules and we want to assure patients, don't be alarmed because we're following things that are likely benign, but a few won't be. And if we follow you carefully, we'll make good decisions regarding biopsy, regarding removal, regarding the whole path. And it's really a team sport here. It's getting into a program and being in the program for a long time. And once people get into our program, there's about an 85% chance they'll stay. And that's wow. Our own data, which is tremendous, you know.
So important. You're listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. I'm here today with Dr. Michael Zwirk. He's a thoracic surgeon at Independence Health in Greensburg. When we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about early detection and also what vaping has meant to his particular health sector. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Classic Hits 107.1. Listen live at WHJBFM.com.
Welcome back to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB. I'm your host, Jennifer Mealy. Here today with Dr. Michael Zwirk. He's a thoracic surgeon with Independence Health. Dr. Zwirk, I'm sure the personally, the ads and the marketing for vaping has infuriated you, particularly as you see how well it worked with young people, not just in Western Pennsylvania, but all over the country. Tell us, what is vaping, and you know, this notion that it's safer than smoking. Throw that right out the window today.
Well, yeah, important discussion point, Jen. So I go out to a lot of high schools and give talks just about healthcare careers, and really trying to encourage people to become doctors, become nurses, become physician extenders. You know, I found out right before the pandemic in a particular school in our area that, you know, virtually the teachers were saying all the kids are vaping. And they sort of looked at me. I said, you got to be kidding me. What are you doing about that? And they just shrugged their head and they said, what can we do about that? So that really opened my eyes to a problem in schools, in middle schools and in high schools. And I found out that the company that owns Marlboro Cigarettes, Altria, bought a company, Juul, and pumped tons of money into it and tried to really hook kids. And they got people from the music industry, how to promote vaping as a socially cool thing. And a lot of these kids had no idea what they were doing or what was going into their lungs. And we started looking at the damaging effects of vaping and how this company marketed it to kids. And so the pandemic came, and then kids were no longer in school. So the vaping rates actually dropped a little bit. The United States government got on that particular vaping company, and really there were lots of lawsuits against the company, state lawsuits, because of how they marketed to kids. So what happened then is they really cut them down. And Chinese companies started coming in with drugs or vaping products that were being sold through the internet out of factories you've never heard of, putting a lot of flavors in them and attracting kids because of the flavoring. But you had no idea the harmful things in the lungs. The bottom line is vaping is a way to deliver nicotine, and it's a way to get people hooked. And these tobacco industry knows that smoking rates are going down worldwide. And so that their next business model is, how do we get people hooked? So they're buying vaping products, and they know the delivery of nicotine is the power that hooks people, and they're trying to hook the young. So we've actually gone out to some middle schools and had crowds of 800 to 1,000 kids talking about this. And the kids really were receptive because they had no idea. They had no idea what they were doing. And so anyone that wants us to come out and give a talk at any level, at any age, we have great talks that are targeted to middle school kids, high school kids, to really make them understand. We're not there to judge them. We're there to give them facts. So hopefully it'll resonate with a few of them. And I think it does, because some of these kids, their parents are vaping in their cars when they're driving home from school, and they have no idea what's going on.
Wow.
So we have to fight hard. We have to fight for these kids and give them an opportunity to have a healthy life, because the toxicity of vaping in lungs is probably real, and maybe even worse than cigarettes in some cases.
Yeah, so I'd like to hear about this a little bit. You know, what are some of the main points of your talk when you go out to talk about this? This is, even though it's not cigarette smoke, it is still delivering this drug right to
your
lungs.
Well, it's putting chemicals in the lungs. And so we show CAT scan images of the harmful chemicals and some of the toxic effects on the lungs that we've actually seen here at Independence Health. You know, we see the level of nicotine, which is far higher than it is in many tobacco products, regular smoking products. And a lot of these kids don't know nicotine, what it is, how it works, how it affects them as teenagers, young adults, how it infects their memory, their concentration, their irritability. They have no idea. And so showing them these things, I think, resonates. I gave a talk at one middle school, and they actually had to make us walk off the stage because the kids had to get to their buses, and virtually every kid's hand was up asking questions.
Wow.
And we blend the talk, not just about vaping, but about the positive aspects of going into healthcare and helping people. And And, you know, so it's a positive talk, and it delivers an important message. And finally, we just said, I can't take any more questions, but you guys got to get on your buses. And it was the best thing we ever did. It was a lot of fun, and love to do it again. But the bottom line is this. Everybody's looking to hook people on things, and nicotine is one of the most powerful drugs to hook people. And we got to help kids not get dependent, because vaping is harmful. There's no question. And the cost, the impact in your life, if you can avoid it, it's tremendous. And for those individuals that are trying to make a transition from tobacco smoke to vaping, the story may be a little different. And that may be a better alternative long term, but that data is still not out there yet. So we don't want to be all negative in the concept of using something other than tobacco smoke, but the studies on the safety of that are not there yet.
So scary. So the kids are all raising their hand and they're saying, I didn't know this, or can you tell me this? What were some of the biggest, most common questions that they were asking you?
Well, they asked about secondhand exposure, which was really scary, because that meant their parents were doing this at home, and they were worried about that. They were worried about sitting in a car with those big, if you've ever been in a car and you're at a stoplight and these big clouds of smoke are coming out of the car in front of you, you know, it's not like they just elected a new pope in there. That is vaping smoke, and that's what's coming out. And that's harmful. There's no question, in a closed door. And these kids had no idea. They had no idea. And some of these kids come from pretty depressed socioeconomic backgrounds, and they don't know better. And maybe their parents don't know better. And our job as human beings with compassion is to help them. Is to help them understand what's going on there, what's being marketed to you, and why are things being marketed to kids? To get them hooked and to get their money. It's as simple as that. And you have that conversation, and it opens up doors, but you're doing it in a positive way. And you're doing it in a way that really gives people an option and makes them understand how to handle stress, how nicotine can help you handle stress, but it's harmful at the end of the day. And we talk about other stress relaxation techniques. I remember I had these kids standing up, taking deep breaths, blowing it out, and saying, hey, there's other paths to handle this. And so it's a big opportunity. It's a tremendous opportunity, especially in depressed socioeconomic areas and other areas like that. The government is doing a good job. They're banning flavored vaping products. The problem is these things are still coming into the United States illegally, and they're being marketed to kids. And they've gotten so slick. They've made these things that are disposable. They've made them that you can recharge the batteries on your computer. They've made them, they're really bright in how they market. And we just got to make sure kids understand the harmful effects. And hopefully their parents understand it as well. It's a big issue. It really is.
Definitely. So let's talk about your offices. Where are you located and where do you operate now?
Well, I'm part of the Independence Health System, and we have a great team. We have approximately 15 people in our office who are involved in lung cancer screening and thoracic surgery and lung cancer management. And our main office is in Latrobe at the Latrobe Hospital. We screen people at 5 different sites throughout Westmoreland County. And through our new partners at Butler Health and Clarion, there's additional screening opportunities up in those communities as well. We want to make it as easy to get screened as it is to get fast food. So, you know, we have 5 different sites that you can go into. And again, the screen itself takes less than a minute. And the process is seamless. We tried to make it that way. And we've also tried to make it easy so that you're not waiting 3 weeks for a result. You're getting a result the next day by someone talking to you on the telephone. We do screen through Westmoreland Hospital. We screen through some of our outpatient sites at Norwin Square, Latrobe Square. Probably we'll be screening in Connellsville soon. We do screen at Frick as well. And also up and again, as I said, in the Butler and Clarion areas.
So many, many options for screening, many options to visit.
Sure. And whether you come to Independence Health or you go to a UPMC facility or an AHN facility or an Independence facility, the most important point, everybody screens, get screened, and make a difference in your life and in your loved ones' lives. And I can't emphasize that more importantly.
The advanced techniques in screening, the advanced techniques in surgery, in treatment. Can you talk a little bit about the data that you've seen in terms of survival rates? Because I can tell you, you know, I know when I was growing up, if someone had lung cancer, you know, it was very serious, and it was probably unlikely that they would survive. And that is not the case now.
Absolutely. So if we look, you know, from the 1960s, the 5-year survival of all cancers has steadily improved. Today, it's over 60%. That's almost doubled what it used to be. So that's a big in lung cancer, unfortunately, prior to screening, the 5-year survival. What does that mean? Well, that means if you're diagnosed today, all comers in lung cancer, that number is pretty low. With screening, with changing treatments, and we have a big opportunity in the treatment platform that we haven't had, that number is now going north. It's coming up. It's probably around 26%. So it's a 6% improvement, which may not seem like a lot. But remember this, most of these patients are coming in with advanced lung cancer. So if you go through screening, you'll come in with early stage lung cancer. And the of why things are better. One is screening. Two is less invasive surgery. And three is all these targeted treatments for lung cancer. So people have gotten really sophisticated, and we have a whole big battery of testing we do on a tumor. If you come in with lung cancer, we will look for the DNA that caused it, and we'll try to find a pill that will block the growth of that tumor. And that's what's different. That did not exist 5+ years ago. And now it's very common. The other thing that's really scary, Jen, is, you know, we see a lot of non-smoking women that come in. We see women of every age. I had a really nice family in here from Johnstown a couple weeks ago, 50-year-old woman, never smoked. And so there's something else going on in our world, in our environment, in hormones that are leading to this. So important also that if you have symptoms, if you develop a cough that you can't explain, go to your primary care doctor, get a screen, get a CAT scan, get a chest x-ray, encourage them to take a look, especially if you have a family history, because those people can be helped too. But it's all of that and more. It's screening, it's less invasive surgery, and it's new treatment options. So lung cancer is no longer a death sentence like it used to be. And more, if you come in with screening, your chances of survivability are improving tremendously. And we look at that data carefully. The vast majority of lung cancer we identify in the 20,000 CAT scans we've done is early stage. It's probably 70% early stage, 70% wow. Curable. And so it's really powerful.
Dr. Michael Zwirk is a thoracic surgeon with Independence Health. He's located all over Western Pennsylvania. You can visit independencehealth.org to learn more about low-dose CT scans for the prevention and, of course, the treatment of lung cancer. Dr. Zwirk, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Jen. I just want your audience to know, you know, Jen Mealy is a wonderful person, and she has done more to help really get these kind of messages out, not only for what we do, but for a whole host of medical problems. We're so fortunate to have her in this community and everything she does for so many people. And thank you very much, Jen.
Well, there's a mutual admiration club, because I have seen firsthand the lives that you have saved in Western Pennsylvania. And it is such a blessing that you're here. Thanks to all of our listeners. Thanks for listening to Westmoreland Community Connections on WHJB.